Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, April 3rd, 2010. I'm Harley Schlanger. I'll be your host today. Now, if you were paying close attention, you probably noticed some changes in the last week toward an intensification of the work done out of Purcellville, Virginia, which is the headquarters of LaRouche PAC TV, to move the nation toward recognition of the absolute necessity for the early impeachment of President Barack Obama. Lyndon LaRouche intervened personally through his leading an 80-minute discussion of real economics as opposed to the murderous fraud that's being perpetrated by the City of London bankers, with full complicity by President Obama and his team of economic advisors who are committing crimes against humanity as they begin the Hitler-style assault on the elderly, the sick, and the poor in the United States with the so-called health care reform. You should take the time to watch LaRouche's discussion. It's on the LPAC website and under the heading Special Weekly Update with Lyndon LaRouche, because this was an absolutely crucial intervention to get at some of the key questions about why economics is a science and not really just a series of statistics and analysis that are designed to convince you it's time to commit suicide because we're running out of resources. Now, you'll also find posted just below Mr. LaRouche's discussion two new features, one titled Obama's Opium War, which looks at the atrocities being committed by the Obama policy in Afghanistan, which represent impeachable offenses in the way this war is being run. And secondly, there's the Stop the British Assassination Plot, which examines how an environment is being shaped for a British-directed assassination of President Obama. Now, you should be clear on this. The view of Mr. LaRouche and our association is that we want the president safe from British-run assassination operations so that he can be impeached and removed from office through constitutional means for the crimes that he's committing. But we do not want a British intervention. We do not want the chaos that would be unleashed by an assassination. And this is something that's extremely important. So these three reports with Mr. LaRouche, the opium war, and the assassination plot, by looking at them and studying them, you can see how Mr. LaRouche has responded to the escalation by the City of London against the United States and against civilization. A policy is being unleashed of war and economic chaos following the passage of the fascist health care bill. Now, there's another initiative that has been taken and escalated also by Mr. LaRouche, which is near and dear to his heart, which is what we're going to be discussing on today's program, which is the battle to free humanity from the assault which was launched by the Venetian Paolo Sarpi to destroy the potential for the advancement of mankind, which grew out of the movement launched by Nicholas of Cusa in the middle of the 15th century, which continued through the Golden Renaissance with Leonardo and Pacioli, and through the revolution in astronomy, but also in physical science, by Johannes Kepler. And the Sarpi operation, which was launched against it, which was an updated version of the old evil of Aristotle and his cult of Delphi. This Sarpi operation is still destroying the potential of science to this very day. Joining me to discuss this on the program today is Michael Kirsch, who's an old friend of mine and an author of a recent excellent study titled Venice and Leibniz, The Battle for a Science of Economy. So, Michael, welcome to the program today.
Glad to be here.
Before we get specifically to Sarpi and Leibniz, let me just ask you to review, if you can, the salient points of the discussion this morning with Mr. LaRouche. You've just come from that discussion. I know he had some comments about what has to be done to get President Obama out and also the relationship of that to economic issues. So what was the thrust of those remarks today?
Well, you know, I think there was a saying, it could have been said earlier in the Obama administration, that Obama is the opiate of the masses, as he was just expressed in his defense of that process in Afghanistan, what we put out the special report on. But what has to be clear to people is that he more at this point he's more of the object of hatred of the masses, and so is the Congress, because if it was clear for people who the real enemy was, which is not Obama, who's a mere tool, but it's the monetary system that he serves, then the battlefield on which American citizens have to fight is clear and what they're up against. Because what he laid out is that monetary system intends genocide for the world. And recently he's pointed out recently he put out a paper called The Brutish Theology of Sex, pointing out that it's this empire which is in the recent in a recent predicate of that, of what the what they've been doing to attack the Catholic Church, which has been a leading obstacle to genocide in the past 30 years against the depopulation policies that the monetary systems run. But that empire has to be understood, and the way of thinking of that empire has to be understood in order for people to, you know, choose their battlefields correctly and organize themselves right now as humanity around the block of the four powers, Russia, China, India, the United States, as the sovereign nations that could put this whole monetary system down.
Well, Michael, to look at this question then of genocide, we know some of the predicates. I mean, the health care bill clearly is modeled on Hitler's useless eaters policy. You save money by killing people who need health care. It's a very simple thing to understand. But also the cap and trade, the Copenhagen Agreement, again, open commitment to genocide. Why is it you think that people still don't see this? I mean, liberals who claim to be committed to the welfare of people, conservatives who claim that they're for life, and yet they're all blocking on this very obvious fact that these policies are designed to kill.
Yeah, what you have is a long condition process of why people who accept these things is rooted in the frauds of science and the frauds of economics are where people start with the assumption that the human mind doesn't exist, and they then perpetuate these beliefs, these mechanical ways of thinking about everything. They become trapped in trapped to perpetuate this belief that somehow, you know, the monetary system is going to work out, and somehow they have to pay heed to this. I mean, and it permeates the whole culture. It's not just the way that people are going to think about.
Well, we
should keep bailing out the.
We saw a perfect example of this in the last couple of days when the report came out yesterday saying that we miraculously created 163,000 new jobs. Of course, 100,000 of those are temporary jobs in the census, and the reality is we're still losing jobs, yet the stock market takes a big jump. That's what you're talking about when you say people still have this magical belief in money, huh?
At this point, that everybody knows that that's just garbage, but they can't say anything else because they studied for years, the past decades, in universities to talk about this stuff. So now, even though everybody knows there's no way that this system's coming back ever, yeah, they continue to talk about this. And what it is that it's belief, it's the way that people have been conditioned to think in their normal behavior in society, in science, economics, culture, and everything, to deny the existence of that which is intending to destroy civilization at this point, an empire, and at the same time to lack the ability that really led to the development of the modern nation state and to perpetuate that nation state. But most importantly, what Lyndon LaRouche took up in his discussion this past week that's featured on our website, 80-minute dialogue, is on the question of the fifth question of his last webcast, on economics, the science of economics, that most importantly, people don't have the means to think about how mankind's true destiny, again, getting back to the fact that people deny, they start by denying the human mind, that man's true destiny is located in his nature, and so the economy should reflect that nature, right? You know, we should have an economy, since the economy is made of human beings, it should be organized and express the nature of those human beings.
Well, and that's what we intend to get to in the bulk of the program today. But just to finish this sort of prologue, and by the way, I'd like to encourage our listeners, if you want to ask a question of Michael, if you are intrigued by what he's saying, if you disagree, I mean, some of you may disagree. Some of you may actually think that the human mind is not very different from the animal. I don't think you'd be on the LaRouche show if you think that, but feel free to send in your questions at radio@larouchepub.com. That's radio@larouchepub, LaRouchePub.com. And we'll take them up as we go on. Now, Michael, you said that what Lyndon LaRouche brought up today as the alternative to this disintegration is his unique prescription for a four-power agreement. He reasserted that in the 80-minute dialogue the other day, and I presume that was part of the discussion again today.
Mm-hmm.
And what did he say?
Well, that, you know, this is the battlefield, that the battlefield is mankind versus something that's intentionally trying to destroy human civilization and reduce the world's population. And people have to start with that reality and what the enemy is. Now, from that standpoint, you realize that you'd have to take the major sovereign nation states of the world that who will still exert their sovereignty and say, we're going to put forward an agreements, put forward the credit we need to supply the needs of our populations, and we'll work together to get those things done. And it's not going to come from Europe, which has given up its sovereignty. And it's not going to come from anywhere that doesn't have a clear sense that this whole global derivatives market is completely, you know, garbage and crap. He said today that, you know, the problem is that Russia is still under the thumb of this, which he took up in his last webcast. And, you know, the capital of Russia right now is really the Cayman Islands or the Dutch Antilles. It's these, so where the so-called wealth is, which should have been obvious back in the fall of 2008, you know, this whole hedge fund monetary system is and was a fraud. So it's the realization has to come from the realization that this, the way that people think about monetarism as any acceptable basis for an economy, is just garbage.
Well, Michael, what do you say to the people who bring up the question? You said, as you pointed out, that Europe has given up its sovereignty with the European Union. We see that with the demands made by the International Monetary Fund for literally genocidal austerity in Greece and Ireland, soon Spain and elsewhere. But what do you say to people who say, well, the United States has given up its sovereignty? We no longer are a sovereign nation. How do you answer that question?
Oh, you poor sap.
Elaborate.
It's not very fun to not express your unique quality of cognition during your life. And this nation was founded upon people who decided that human creativity, the nature of man, was something which should be developed as the purpose of society. And you have it's a lack of, you say to these people, well, you know, are you an American? Because the whole existence of America is based on the unique powers of mind and their credit system that was developed. When people say we're going to use that power of mind, well, we need something to support it. We need a system of credit that can support that, which you get with Hamilton and the Massachusetts Bay Colony.
Well, let's get into some of these background issues that actually are behind the question of sovereignty, because a lot of people, and I spend a lot of my time talking to people from Tea Party and the old Clinton networks and Ron Paul, and they yell sovereignty in the Constitution, and then they're somewhat at a loss when you try to put together what that means. And I found one of the most interesting aspects of your paper is that you demonstrate that the idea of national sovereignty explicitly comes from a scientific definition of the human mind and human nature. And I think this is an important starting point. So you identify Kuza, Kepler, and Leibniz. Kuza in particular because of the work that led to the first nation states with France and England, but then Leibniz for the special role he played for the United States. So let's just start with this question of what does human nature have to do with the question of sovereignty?
Yeah, well, the thing you have with today's modern science and today's economics is that it's all crap because it just doesn't really deal with what the subject is. And the subject is, if you're a human being, is that you have a certain power of creativity, which is undeniable from what we've done in increasing the power of man over nature, increasing our potential relative population density over the last couple thousand years in order to support more and more people at a higher and higher living standard.
So, Michael, just to summarize that then, you're saying the subject of economics, this is, I think, Mr. LaRouche's point, is this question of man's mastery over nature.
And that was the explicit enemy of Paulo Sarpi. Paulo Sarpi, who we'll get into more later who exactly he was, but he actually is quoted in saying that the increase of man's mastery over nature is the enemy, which gets people to think all sorts of things that makes them uncontrollable by Venice. But, if you start with the fact that creativity exists, then you say, well, there has to be a reason for all things, and the organization of the non-living, the living, and mankind should therefore conform to reason. And liberty, which is the power of following reason, and happiness, which is and life, which is the principles of this country, are founded upon, a recognition of the power of reason, which should organize man. But now, how man organizes his own society is in accord with studying and applying principles that are discovered in nature to better organize himself and his an infrastructure, which is an expression of that, in order to increase the happiness of people.
Go ahead.
And the power of a nation state consists in saying, well, we want to do that. The thing is, we've been up against a certain empire of usury that has come up with different means of obscuring and destroying and creating outright just frauds of science and statecraft and ideas of law, ideas of religion, all sorts of things to obscure exactly that power of creativity.
So if the subject of what we might call human economics or Leibnizian economics is man's mastery over nature, the central issue of a republic is in a sense how to suppress that so you can keep people ignorant and as mere animals that can be exploited by the ruling oligarchy.
Yeah. The central method of the empire. You take a set of objects and you say, okay, well, how would you brainwash someone if you really wanted to do it? There's a few different methods, and you can come up with different axioms that are considered these are the truths and these are a priori truths. But what Paulo Sarpi did was to say we're going to have these objects. They move around in certain ways, and then your idea of knowledge is just being able to accurately describe the motion of all these objects. And then you get people to think that that's the only thing that they need to that's the only thing they need to think about in any particular subject. And Paulo Sarpi basically he took that. He said the whole universe is just an object of sense, and the only thing you really need to do is describe those objects of sense. And the only essential nature of the universe, any part of the universe, is the fact that you can describe it with geometry, and that's considered truth. There are no principles. That sort of sense description is a replacement then for that other Renaissance view of man, because what you can do then is you can say, oh, we love science. We have a curriculum of science. We have all these scientists over here. We can show everybody, and they can study them in the universities, and those scientists are scientists who follow that method of not identifying their mind in the investigations of nature, but identifying objects of sense.
Well, and you give two very profound case studies of precisely that. For people who think that this is somewhat an academic nitpicking, actually, you point to Sarpi's direct agent, Galileo, who was deployed against Kepler, and then the way Newton was deployed against Leibniz. So these are not merely differences of opinion. They're fundamentally different epistemological approaches.
Yeah, and that's why, I mean, listeners can be happy about one fact right now, because the state of the world looks pretty grim in terms of the trajectory we're on. And, you know, global, we're on the verge of a question of whether Israel is going to start a war with Iran. We're on the question of whether Russia is going to continue to be captive of the monetary system. The U.S. is under a Nazi healthcare, basically austerity plan across the board. But the thing we have going for us is that we here at the Rouge Pack, we know what the fraud is, and the whole thing can be exposed. And if people would know what that fraud is, they may be one step closer to overthrowing the entire game board, which is this false debate over what we're going to do about money and what we're going to do. And then another debate in science we can get into. But, yeah, this debate over, you know, how are we going to move this money around? Don't we have to do this? Don't we have to do that? And that kind of thinking that permeates all these layers of the citizenry and government is based on these frauds of Newton and of Descartes, which were not anything that came out of Newton or Descartes. They weren't very smart people, and they were more believers in the frauds that were created by the real game, the game masters, which were Antonio Conti and earlier Paolo Sarpi.
Well, let's look at Sarpi for a minute, because obviously, as you point out, Sarpi was very consciously deployed into this. And tell us a little bit about Sarpi and his specific evil that he introduced.
Well, if anybody gets a copy of the pictures of Conti and Paolo Sarpi, Paolo Sarpi is the better looking of the two. But he's also perhaps the more insightful and evil of the two. What he did is he studied the works of other Renaissance leaders, such as, well, of Nicholas of Cusa and other people, and came up with the idea of how Venice was going to continue to survive as Venice was its power was weakened in the face of the increase of man's power over nature with the rise of the sovereign nation states in the end of the 15th and beginning of the 16th century. And by the end of the 16th century, Venice, although it continued to survive and do lots of things and setting up, trying to spread around, its essential tactic was failing. And Paolo Sarpi became the chief consul to the Venetian Senate in 1606, after he'd already risen to the intellectual leader of the new Venice, the Giovanni Party in Venice, that decided they were going to save Venice by taking up new means of opposing the rise of the nation state. And what he came up with was a way to take over science from the inside. And he was a set, he was really the vortex of a lot of people, which people can read about more extensively, and there'll be more coming out on the subject. But he was a vortex intellectually because of this insight that he had and a real extensive study he did in the 1570s and 1580s of Aristotle, Thomas Aquinas, William of Ockham, and he came up with this new doctrine of extension as the basis for how to brainwash people. And gave that method of extension to Galileo and other circles around him to say, we're going to, some people characterize it as cynicism or skepticism of man's nature. He was just skeptical about anything good coming out of mankind, and, you know, we just have to describe everything. But what it really was an insight into how to overthrow the real lifeblood of the nation state, science. But he and he didn't believe this thing that he was creating, which is very obvious when you look at what he did. He was creating it consciously to say, this will replace the real science we see. And so he created these people like Galileo and his networks, then his followers created Descartes, to perpetuate that that model of extension.
Now, I think it's important, by the way, for those who just joined us, we're talking with Michael Kirsch, the author of a really groundbreaking study, Venice and Leibniz, The Battle for a Science of Economy. Groundbreaking in the sense that many people who have been working with Lyndon LaRouche over the years knew a lot of pieces of this. But I think you put together, both from a scientific epistemological standpoint and in-depth historical research, a real breakthrough in terms of getting inside the battle. Now, I want to come back then to the Sarpi question, because as Sarpi was doing this, it was at a moment when there had been an eruption of a potential to break up empire, both with Louis XI in France, with Henry VII in England. There was a potential for this to just threaten the idea that wealth comes from control of money, because what you had with Louis XI, with Henry VII, was the idea of the beginning of a physical economy. But when do you think this idea, I know you identify real physical economy with Leibniz, and by the way, you have some absolutely excellent quotes from Leibniz from his, what might be called his political writings, to show the relationship of the science and the politics. But how do you think this idea of physical economy emerged in this cauldron of battle between the neo-Aristotelians of Sarpi versus the nation-state?
Oh, well, I think it's an expression of, it's really an expression of deciding that mankind should be mankind and not something that is a slave of a monetary system. Because mankind's natural relationship is to see. Let's take it from this angle. If you have what we have to do now is we have to create. And right now, modern empiricism, Paulo Sarpi's what he ended up doing, is really shown to be bankrupt in its modern expression of positivism. Because what we have to do continuing man's power over nature, in controlling the way that mankind survives, in managing the raw materials of the planet, is we've come to the realization that we have to be able to synthetically create raw materials, but we have to move our area of influence in the solar system to encompass the whole area between Earth and Mars, and then Mars. And all of the phenomena that are going on in controlling and developing and have control and develop the course of evolution are phenomena which are not according to the Sarpi empiricist model. They're phenomena according to the fact of what Leibniz did in realizing that matter, unlike what Sarpi said, is just pure extension, the fact that it takes up this empty space that he said has length, width, and breadth. As opposed to that, Leibniz defined dynamics as the capability of discovering what is organizing matter at every moment and in the smallest part of matter. And not just matter, but then realizing that there's these unseen principles that are organizing matter, which mankind can discover. That's the method we're going to need now, a process-based and top-down cognitive-based orientation to sort out and figure out what is, in fact, all these phenomena that are going on that we have to master, both for the Earth and also for taking up this mission between Earth and Mars. But it's located there. We can discuss that more. It's located in there where economy becomes now something which is seen as a science, seen as a physical science, just as chemistry is, or just as meteorology is, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have one of your quotes here, which I think expresses from Leibniz's own pen precisely what you're talking about now, his letter to Peter the Great, when Peter the Great asked him to establish a scientific economic program for Russia. And Leibniz wrote back to him, "I'm not one of those who love only their motherland or any single nation. All my thoughts are turned to the benefit of mankind because I consider the heavens to be my mother country and all sensible persons its fellow citizens. My ultimate goal is to increase general prosperity. I prefer seeing an upsurge in the development of sciences in Russia than their slow progress in Germany. A country where sciences sustain continuous growth will be dearest to me because this country is most likely to promote and thus to contribute to the general good of mankind." So it seems to me, Michael, in that quote, we see very clearly the intention of, or the relationship between development of physical economy as a science with the establishment of a modern sovereign nation state.
Yeah, and you feel everybody was inspired by Leibniz, who was around him and who communicated him in correspondence, to take that up for their own nations, to realize that, well, man's nature is to perform something which never actually occurred before man manifested himself, and how that occurred, we don't know exactly. But you have organisms, living organisms, which they essentially express the intention of different principles that exist, in such as how chlorophyll converts sunlight into usable energy to create carbohydrates for itself, and act in very complicated ways that are not completely clear to science, but it's interacting with different wavelengths of radiation and concentrating this energy in a way which is essentially expressing an intention of different principles that exist. But mankind, we can essentially willfully apply these different intentions of the universe in order to increase, uplift our fellow man. And that's fun. What's not fun is right now what is we're dominated by is the lack of understanding of how to do that. And the fact that that would be the only reason in which you'd want to organize a group of people and get them to do something. Right now, we have a bunch of people organized to get together to basically sign their own death warrant.
Well, in a sense, acting
under
against
Obama's
nature,
healthcare plan,
or even acting against nature. If you think about the policies in Germany now to build solar panels and windmills, and to destroy the science of nuclear technology.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what you really got a sense with that is Leibniz, that Leibniz and the great leaders of nation states, it's all one thing. And you get this with Alexander Hamilton and today Lenin LaRouche, that it's very clear that essentially science is, because you have to say, what is science? And I think that's what becomes clear when you look at the fight between the Leibniz school and Sarpi, is that science is really for discovery. And what the Sarpi model was not just, to make it clear, it's not just taking over science and doing something else with it, but that it was really taking over science to destroy discoveries from happening whatsoever. And basically, the irony is that they had to steal other people's discoveries in order to push this model.
Well, that's the...
Right, because you couldn't have an authority that
right.
This model would be at all acceptable if you hadn't... some valid discovery involved.
Well, in your paper, you focus on Galileo, the plagiarist. Here you had Kepler, the genuine scientist, who was being, they attempted to reduce him to a mere metaphysician, while the Venetians were channeling to Galileo every discovery that was being made and giving him credit for it. And then you reviewed the same thing that was done about a century later with Newton versus Leibniz, the deliberate intention of the British to diminish Leibniz, who was a factor in the succession fight in England. And it may be relevant because this has a lot to do with what led to the founding of the United States, Leibniz's intervention in England. I think that this Newton-Leibniz question is absolutely a critical question for understanding what 60 years later, Benjamin Franklin and the American Revolution fulfilled. You want to say something about that?
Well, if you look how much effort is put into these creation of these scientific frauds, and the reason is because it's the discoveries of man which basically unbound man from control as being used as an animal, as used as a slave in a system of usury that was in Venice and is today very real, very existent through globalization. I think it's what's key to understand is that that empiricism, scientific empiricism, is really the nursemaid of monetarism, and the monetary system suckles at the tit of the empiricist mother, because without destroying man's real understanding that the essence of man and therefore society should be to promote discoveries for their own sake, but also for the fact that they increase the efficiency and wealth of the economy. Therefore, you need to destroy that if you're going to push. What are you pushing? You're pushing monetarism and gambling, essentially, and all of these stock exchanges as so-called economics, and that's what the whole spread of Venice into the Netherlands and then into England, as you're just saying, that Leibniz was fighting was a takeover by monetarism. And this Newton thing was just completely all created. Newton was a completely synthetic creation in terms of his popularity and his renown, which was actually only in England until Voltaire, Conti's agent, perpetuated him elsewhere. But it was all put forward by the Venetian junto of Charles Montague and others to create this guy and put this image forward as, this is what science, this is the kind of science we tolerate here in England, and we don't tolerate the kind of ideas of Leibniz. And, they use Newton explicitly to try to discredit and keep what they really realized was this enemy of theirs, Leibniz, out of England.
And then you make the point, just to move ahead toward the end of your article, that the role of Conti in doing this in science, the attack on Leibniz, the destruction of the notion of the idea of the mind as the central feature of economic development, takes us into a realm that Lyndon LaRouche described in his most recent paper as the brutish theology of sex. Because what you have with Adam Smith, who's portrayed as an economist, is really a kind of pervert who's really writing about economics as the immediate gratification or the avoidance of pain. For some British, pain is part of their gratification, but we'll leave that for another subject. But this is really what Lynn's talking about. But this is what Lynn's talking about with the degeneration of a society. When you move away from this idea that is explicit in Leibniz, so the development of the human mind as an instrument of nature, of creativity in nature, when you move away from that, you turn man into a beast. And that's actually what monetarism is based on, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, every single one of Leibniz's works, the thing that's there is reason as the reason as primary, and the fact that there's a sufficient reason for all things, and that should guide any thought process of man. And once you deny that, you say there is no reason for anything, you can tolerate these frauds like Newton and get a bunch of people to think they're being scientists by the fact they're describing things, and today think they're being economists by making the buying and selling and the money that's involved in buying and selling the so-called cause of the economy as a whole, which is completely bass ackwards, right? And Newton and this whole crew is based on saying reason doesn't exist. And therefore, you can get people to say there's no principles, there's no truth. So, what's this better than something else? And that's exactly why people are tolerating Obama, why the Democratic Party's dead, why this monetary system, which is dead itself, is still believed in.
Or Michael,
that's why it is absolutely essential. Sorry?
You could say that the ultimate metaphor for the Newtonian system is the fraud of climate science and the efforts to monetize it with a cap-and-trade system.
Yeah, the best metaphor is these scientists are drooling, falling asleep at these conferences on their desks.
Yeah, but at the same time...
You realize it's been 200 years of people falling asleep in school.
But at the same time, they're making sure their broker knows that they want to invest in the latest thing from Blood and Gore Enterprises.
I mean, you're talking about people who have become conditioned for 200 years. I mean, that's what was striking for me in writing this thing, is realizing that what you get with positivism, the Russell School, David Hilbert, and the things that Max Planck was fighting, if you read Max Planck's works, you realize he's identifying exactly what I identified there in the paper as the SARP model, what he's up against. There's no real difference of positivism and SARP. And then you realize that, oh my God, you say to yourself, well, this model of empiricism that was created, you know, consciously by Venice to destroy human discoveries and the nation-state system that they were up against, well, these assumptions are very long perpetuated through all of modern thought now for a very, very long time. And so what we're doing is we're going to start back with the paradoxes of modern science that mankind needs to take up right now, especially to expand its economy outside the Earth and also over the Earth. And we're going to just say, this is what happened. And that's why it's an important study for people to read, because all those axioms have to be wiped out first in order for people to take up anything real in science or economics. But those axioms happen to be very deeply rooted. And in any modern study, it's almost pure Newton, except the person who's studying it may not be a follower of Newton, and so there might be something that they have to contribute in their investigation of science that can be extracted. But on the surface, it's all formulated in that line. We just had 3 days ago, Switzerland turned on the Hadron Collider, and there may be some very great things to be discovered, and you know, with the Basement Project, we welcome that breakthrough. But the assumptions that are some of the people who are running it are putting forward, that they're going to discover the origin of the universe and the Big Bang. That's not what we're looking for with that.
Well, Michael, there was a new direction, in a sense, identified recently from the Basement work, and I know you work you're part of the Basement team. In Sky Shields' paper following Keisha Rogers' election victory, where the issue of NASA was put back on the table, but not just NASA, because we're not talking about nuts and bolts of rockets. We're actually talking about a conception of the future that has to govern our existing scientific research. So Sky identified, in conjunction with what Lynn has been talking about, this question of cosmic radiation. How does this fit into the Leibnizian versus the Sarpian battle that you've identified in your paper?
Well, it's question of objects of sense perception versus the processes that organize these, which is exactly what Leibniz was doing there. But what it is that, you know, Leibniz was essentially in his work with in founding the academies of science that Benjamin Franklin later perpetuated here. And Benjamin Franklin explicitly wrote, you know, these are going to be great discoveries made by these academies in investigating all these different things in order to increase man's power over nature. And essentially what Leibniz has in his Subject to Manufactures is then a promotion of that by means of the credit system. It was very clear that that was what the essence of the economy is. Now, what we have, if you look at an economy in the way that LaRouche took it up in his fifth in his response to a leading economist in the United States, as he was saying, you know, we have to look at how these organisms concentrate resources. Mankind moves to higher energy flux densities to himself, concentrate more and more scarce resources, and move these resources around, distribute them for mankind's economy. Now, what we are looking at today is traveling and developing the Moon and Mars. And to do that, we've got all these phenomena of cosmic radiation that are going on that are defining a general subject of study of radiation. Once you say cosmic radiation, now you're expanding the whole study. But what we're doing in the basement right now is we're taking up, something like the periodic table of elements. And the way that people think of it is wrong, because they think of it as these little hard balls, organized in different ways. But even if you start with Mendeleev, he was looking at different processes, not the objects themselves is what were important. It's different processes. What we're doing is we're going to amp this up to look at biological functions, biological processes as primary. Look at the different chemical elements, isotopes that are involved in those processes, such as chlorophyll, what chlorophyll does, but then realize that we're dealing with not these, not just the elements in these processes, but certain wavelengths of light, or spectroscopy, essentially, different radiation that are going on, organizing those biological processes. And we begin to then generalize what's guiding these different interactions of radiation and chemical isotopes that are going to be useful for mankind, how the biosphere uses it. We organize the periodic table according to top-down man's relationship and how he's going to organize himself according to a better understanding of these different biological processes and on Earth, right?
Well, this gets back to what we were talking about in the very beginning. On the one hand, you have a science which is based on the almost unlimited potential to transform the physical universe, as opposed to an empire which wants to, in a sense, have an unchanging relationship between man and nature.
Yeah, we're saying, that's crap, because what we're going to do is that mankind's destiny, if you think about what we've done, you start with Lincoln. We had a transcontinental railway, and then you take what we have now is the potential for a global Eurasian land bridge system, and what the Russians were pushing, a Bering Strait tunnel in the end of the 19th century, but not only we can organize and the distribution of these resources, but we can now expand. We've gone to the moon, and we can expand our development of infrastructure to be more of a generalized science in the way we're going to have to set up trade route systems for the solar system as a whole, but more immediately with Mars. And to do that, we're going to have to figure out, what are the different electromagnetic fields and all these different phenomena that are constantly interacting with the Earth that we don't know about if we're going to have mankind exist in space. And so it's this process, it's this method of looking at things as the process first versus this empiricism of the positivists and Sarpi and the Big Bang freaks who, whether they were trying to find the origin of sex. And instead, starting with what we're talking about. So what we have is if we can take different case studies of different biological functions and begin to look at the radiation involved there, and then look at the radiation involved more generally between Earth and Mars, we can begin to see, how is mankind going to then use those principles, control these principles, use these principles just as we do in the formation of infrastructure here on Earth. And that's some of what Lin was getting at in his response to the fifth question of saying, we're going to look at an economy as physical chemistry. And the starting point is, the so-called non-living physical chemistry defined by processes. Then you go to Vernadsky, what I'm referencing here, the biological functions, what principles are involved there that we don't actually know that are active. And then mankind willfully employing those different phenomena, fields, radiation, and the chemical isotopes that we're going to need for man, such as in fighting cancer, being able to willfully now wield these and and organize the economy around that. Basically, we're taking the human economy, we're going to expand it, and to set up a whole, you know, infrastructure route between here and Mars.
Well, and this is why we have to come back, I think, to the initial point of the discussion. As long as we have that British puppet, Barack Obama, in the White House, the effort is going to be to continue to focus people on statistics and useless information to prevent them from actually seeing what the true destiny of mankind is. And so if you're having trouble following some of this, we're going to have a lot more coming up on the website. I know you mentioned to me there's some discussion about some science videos that I'd like to bring up in a moment. But to our listeners, look, this potential of organizing an economy around the nature of man is really the issue in this fight. And, you know, you can't really blame Obama. He is what he was, what he is. He was put in there to perform a function. Meanwhile, the empire is in deep trouble. And I think, Michael, I'd like, before we come back to what we're going to do with the website, if you can just elaborate a little bit more on how the what this potential is to change human society using the NASA program, using these kinds of investigations into physical chemistry, biology. There's almost no limitation as to what we can do.
Yeah, I mean, because it's starting from the standpoint of saying the universe is creative, because we know that human creativity exists in the universe, and you start from there. The problem is with positivism, you know, is what we've been discussing, that the whole Sharpie and his grandchild Isaac Newton, what these guys start with is they start with a false model of sense perception. So if you start instead with human creativity, you say, well, the universe has to have a principle of creativity in it because mankind exists. And now you look at the fact that all these, you look at that there's a reason in different unseen principles, such as the way that chlorophyll molecules, the different pigments in these different green plants, are shooting radiation back and forth to each other. Well, there's some reason why that works, and if we can discover the reason why that works, we now gain a new understanding that we can apply to basically increase how many people we can support. Right? If we could actually increase the efficiency of chlorophyll, we're controlling how many people we can feed. Right? That's just one example of something that's going to come out of this mission to get to Mars. Because what the mission to get to Mars says is, well, we have to get there, but we have to get there not only in less than 300 days because of all of the deterioration effects that would occur by sitting in a metal box between Earth and Mars for 300 days, but it's then actually sustaining life. There's all sorts of things that go on here on Earth, different fields that typified by that example of chlorophyll, which if we can discover them, then we can synthetically create them. And it then changes the way that you think about infrastructure here on Earth in general, because now you're talking about things, any principles that man applies, such as transportation systems, nuclear power, become things that are they're created not we're creating the environment essentially for man. We're not adjusting to the environment. That's just we found ourselves in because the process of evolution. But now we're saying if we were creating, say we go to Mars, we're going to create a whole environment. We don't even know how. What are all the principles that are going on there already, unseen, right? Electromagnetic fields and things. But we now look at man as a creator. We say now we take the Earth and we look back at the economy on the Earth. Well, we want to create the environment we need for man. We don't want to adjust to, you know, what we just find ourselves here with. Well, and it's this thinking of the environment, it's the, you know, the horrible thinking of the environmentalist whole monetary system that says, well, you know, you find yourself in this environment right now, the economy's no good, we don't get the money for this, we got to cut costs.
And then you start killing people.
Yeah,
people. see, this
and
is
it's not thinking. It's the adjust. It's the people who've adjusted to not thinking of man as a creator, because they start with empiricism as the way they think about everything. That they would even tolerate such a fraud as Adam Smith's market economy.
But you see, this is really
the craziest thing ever.
This gets to the heart of the problem, because I think, in a way, the philosophical conception underlying Leibniz's statement that this is the best of all possible worlds, you've just presented it in its most beautiful way, that mankind possesses the capability to solve any single problem that confronts us in the universe, as opposed to those who say there are laws and principles we'll never discover that are causing us to have to make decisions that will kill our children's future and kill the elderly. So I think
that's
this
exactly
is,
it. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is really
people say there's no reason for this to occur. It's just happening.
Yeah.
Why is it happening? It's just happening because it's happening.
I think we can say it's happening because people have adopted stupid personas, because they've allowed themselves to fall prey to the work of Sarpi. And
yeah.
What you're giving us is the means by which we can overthrow this. Quickly, we only have about 4 minutes left. You mentioned something about some ideas of how we're going to be presenting these things on the website. Anything that you can report to people?
Well, I think it's this here, this point that you just made, that we've made, is the most important guiding point, because what we're saying, this fright since Paolo Sarpi, I mean, that is really is his intention to act as the nursemaid for the continuation of Venetian monetarism, is still what's defined this battle. And if citizens, if they recognize that instead, you know, reason does exist, and therefore there's reason for things, they're now held accountable to act and to act on those reasons, and not tolerate anybody that goes along with something just because it's popular. And what we're putting forward is studies on the kinds of thinking around Einstein, Planck, Vernadsky, that people need to understand to think about physical space-time, physical space, to realize what the physical space-time they find themselves in between Earth and Mars, you know, for the kind of future orientation we need. We're going to be putting more material along those lines on the website. But I think it really is this. It comes down to this fight here, because we're dealing with Obama, who's just came out and said, you know, we're going to cut costs. Well, why is anybody tolerating that? I mean, I think this is what gets at it.
Or I think the other point that, again, people should go to the website and see this thing on Obama's opium war. But he makes a quick trip into Afghanistan, makes this big thing about how he's calling on Karzai, the president of Afghanistan, to be more ethical and more democratic. And meanwhile, U.S. troops are clearing out areas of Taliban and leaving the opium, which is then sold to provide more weapons to the people who are being deployed not only against U.S. soldiers, but also against Russia. So this is another impeachable act. And these things are intelligible. They can be explained. And the American people are not at all happy with the direction of the country. The question is breaking out of the chains that were developed by the Sarpian thinking. Michael, any last thoughts?
The authority to do that, we have it here for you, because the authority is the fact that this thing was a willful fraud created by Venice and later then the British Empire, a willful fraud against the sovereign nation state. And as a citizen of a sovereign nation state, you realize that all of this was created to destroy you. Well, then, you better fight that, buddy.
Your ability to think is the only thing that ultimately can save your life and the life of the nation and the future for yourselves and your family. All right, well, Michael, we're pretty much out of time. I'd encourage people. Your article's up on the website, isn't it?
Yeah, it's if you go to the basement page, under reports, on the right column, you'll find my article. Otherwise, you can search for it in the Roosh Pack website. Leibniz and Leibniz, The Battle for a Scientific Economy.
Okay, well, I would recommend that everyone who's serious about this fight go to the LaRouchePack.com, get Michael's article, study it, think about it, and then watch the 80-minute discussion of Lyndon LaRouche on the question of economics as a science, as a physical science. We're out of time. This has been the LaRouche Show. Join us next week when we'll be with you again at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And go out and organize. Do some good for yourself and mankind.